After further review, the ruling on the field stands as called. Bill Bennett was inbounds and is coming back to tell us a little bit more about the glass cockpit broadcast studio and why virtualization. From ENCO, please welcome back Bill Bennett.
So this presentation is going to be interesting. This is the first time I've given it, and after about 4 or 5 hours at Starbucks on Sunday, and then some 2 more hours of tweaks last night, I think it's done. and it's, I think, 68 slides. Sorry. and I'm the last of the day, so I realize there's food and exhibits waiting quickly behind us. So what this is going to be about is kind of, towards the end of this, is I really actually want to open us up into a dialogue, a conversation, because I don't have ideas where I'm going to say, hey, guess what, this is exactly what's coming up in the future. That's not possible. I have my ideas. My background skews mostly in technical production and technical producing. I've done several Olympics managing venues for the design and games time operations of commentary systems at venues. In a previous life, I did laser shows. My content on the technical side is my focus, not deep engineering. So you guys, most of you could seriously blow me away with real technical things that I don't know, even though I am an engineer. So there are limits. But all that is to say, I'm going to talk about basically how the technology and the production environment is evolving. And a lot of it now is in absolute permanent evolutionary state. But I also, therefore, have to go backwards a little bit, which is kind of fun when I was researching things. And then we'll kind of jump out of that. You'll see this is going to bounce around a little bit. We're going to talk about virtualization. What does it mean? And it's lots of different forms. And then the future, we will discuss this as a group, I think. So those were the introductory remarks. Okay. So this is not going to be a history lesson. There's going to be gaps. There's going to be entirely technologies that we're not going to touch on. And I will take a little creative license with pacing, with stuff, just to kind of get the points across, not always in sync from a calendar standpoint. And one theme I kind of saw coming through this as I was building it was touch. And that is how you as an engineer can touch the circuit, touch a signal, and how that's changing. So, just a reminder, back in the day we had cart machines. Maybe some of you still have something in the back of a production studio somewhere. Chances are you've digitized everything. Audio very much flowing on baseband. Now, this presentation, I'm going to keep talking about radio and audio is my thing mostly, but also video, so I will go back and forth a little bit, but this is mostly an audio presentation. Control systems back in the days, literally relays and 25-pair cables and XY pegs in as far as logic, things you could see and touch, stepper motors, you could hear if things are changing. The FCC requiring logging has always been there, how we do that's changed. Production was very hands-on, very physical. You've got this song, you've got this tape, this song, and you're gonna plug it into this machine, and then you're gonna hit that green button and it's gonna play. I started in radio in the mid-80s at WJR in Detroit, and I remember this one guy running down the hall, walking quickly with a whole stack of carts right before his show, and he didn't fall, but you know where I'm going with this. Exactly, it was raining carts, and of course he grabbed them off the rack in the hallway in the order he was going to play them out, right? He's got his traffic list, and he's just, doing that, and, fun times. But in a way, that's how, that was you building your playlist. Right? So you could touch the stuff, but content resourcing, aggregation, syndication, all of that has changed a great deal when things used to be produced in-house or nationally or internationally now. This is an awesome photo. I really should have hit it even sooner because just stare at that. Some of you, many of you have seen these. Others, maybe not so much. When I started, the console was knobs, was carts on a rack, it was turntables and a couple of Otari floor machines. Everything there is again very analog, and you knew what was coming from, you knew what was going, I don't want to dwell too much. We will be here past dinner if I do. But remember, there's the cart for those who haven't seen it, like an 8-track tape, just without the roller in there, that would pop up when it's time to play. You know, audio cue tones or subaudible cue tones were used as part of the automation to give signals to change from one cart to another or to play more from a tape and then cut back to carts, what have you, and, you know, the timing of all that. And then, of course, DTMF, the dual tone multi-frequency, Turner was practically, that was practically part of their brand on CNN when you'd write at the top of the hour here, you know, and that's the signal downstream to start doing your local origination insertion of ads on that television, you know, network. And then, you know, remembering how you had to wind a tape, really, it's head in or tails in, you know, what's at the inside of that reel. That was the thing. So some of that stuff, I don't know, we always have to watch when we start waxing, whistling on the past, because it's fun memories, but is it always the best way to do things? You know, that it was then, but that's just because that's how it worked then. Okay, reminder about all this stuff. Back when the World Cup soccer came to Detroit, I did the commentary systems for at the Silver Dome. We had about 80 T66 blocks we had to punch. We had 80 commentary positions. We have about 100 punch blocks on the wall. I couldn't find a photo of it. I think I have one on film somewhere. And then when commentators would change between matches, we'd have to do a whole bunch of changes and cross connects. That was our router. So, you know, but it was neat that back in the day, you could actually touch these circuits. You got an issue, you got your butt set, or, you know, or any kind of device to tone out and listen to it right there. There's some audio. Okay, good. We're good there. Okay, check down the road. Okay, ooh, got a bad punch. Wiggle the wires. Ah, darn. That's what it was. Whew, those are embarrassing. You know, a neat example here of a Mosley PBR30. This is, you know, it's an analog stepper motor. Controlling transmitters when you're not there, you know, you have to have remote access to it. You can do it with relays. You know, you can monitor voltages and current. You can't necessarily automate very well with that yet. You still have that manual control panel at a studio back and forth. Notice, of course, GPIOs. Those never seem to go away. You know, and then this was, you know, I was talking about FCC and logging. Nowadays, it's just on a hard drive, right? And you can, you know, mammoth amounts of content you can store in original broadcast quality. But back in the day, dictaphone, you remember these reels would go super, super slow, you know, and you'd have to get changed out every day or what have you. Turner, I read that they did 24 hours in an 8-hour VHS tape. You can imagine how crummy that looked. And that's video with audio, right? Ugh! You know, that's an 8-hour VHS tape slowed down to 24 hours per tape. When I used to work at QVC, they had a closet full of VCRs, and it would be someone's job every day or a few days to go in there and swap all the tapes out. And that was hopefully not, I'm sure it's better quality than that. But so just a reminder how that's changed. You know, field production really has evolved a lot too, clearly. The equipment used to be a lot bulkier, a lot less fragile, you know, also much more expensive to replace if you had to. But you edited on tape, and you really mostly did it at the studio. And notice, collaboration back in the day was in the building where everybody was, the talent, the engineers, and all the equipment was there. That's kind of how you had it. I mean, you needed to edit tape with a razor blade on. You're going to have to go there to do it. You probably don't have a half-inch, quarter-inch, or whatever machine at home. Nor might you want to do that at home. Expensive, right? And again, with software, things have gotten so much cheaper. So, and I think that's kind of another theme too, is remember, people had to go to the buildings because the technology was hard to get at home, and so, or wherever they are in the field, they needed to be there where the gear was. Just a reminder, again, most shows were done locally, right? I mean, literally, I hope you're shooting blanks there, but how cool. I mean, all kinds of stations around the country had huge staffs and huge budgets that they could create this content on their own. They weren't able to get national feeds or synchronize with another station to get national feeds. Dearly, like we can now. You know, in viewing, right, in listening, right, that was done by, again, appointment view. Even with the advent of the DVRs, TiVo and replay really kind of started people with the idea of shifting, and video on demand, of course, is all about shifting, and podcast and all the on-demand streaming. I mean, we'll talk a little bit later, what is live anyway anymore? Which is actually, I think, unfortunate in a way, because you don't have that Monday morning water cooler talk about that show that was on at Sunday night. Except some shows do drop one episode a week, and maybe that's kind of the twist there. But then again, boy, do we have convenience now. We're traveling around listening to all kinds of podcasts, and oh wait, I'm getting ahead of myself. So IT, you know, saving money is always a thing, right? And manufacturers always like to make new things, always have new ideas and great ideas, and broadcasters want new improvements and efficiencies and things that are more reliable. That's kind of where IT kind of came in. And digitization of audio was kind of one of the earlier things. The company I worked for had a big hand in that back in the 90s, in fact. Computers originally for traffic and scheduling, it's easy to do spreadsheets. One thing I'm going to keep talking about all the way through here is mics and speakers. It's like, why are these things still analog? I don't get this. Control systems, again, now we start to trust them, back in this kind of a development era behind us. Production and collaboration evolves, right? You can get a copy of Cool, edit something at home, maybe put it onto a floppy and then take it to the studio. Okay, not a floppy probably, but still, burn it to a CD or something. Content, over time, content's becoming more global, content becomes more shareable, live as well. And viewer methods evolve. Here's a studio. When I really got started was this. That looks like a PR&E console. WBNI radio is the studio. There's a computer there for traffic. I'm not sure if they're doing play out on it or not. Analog mics, electro voice speakers in the ceiling. I mean, God, I remember those again from the 80s. Shure mics, SM7s and 5s. Solid mics even today. But there's kind of a hybridization right there, right? Whether or not they're playing play out on that computer, they at least have traffic on that. To talk about my company a little bit, Enco, right in the mid-90s, we came up with DAD, digital audio delivery, and first, I believe we were the first to have a touchscreen interface. You can touch the computer and actually drive a song, or a commercial with your fingers and not use the mouse. That's of course throwing that all onto a hard drive and networking that through not IP but 10BASE-T audio, right? So then those networks where you unplug one anywhere along the way and you take out the whole rest of the chain, it's like, whoops. But with that, fewer cart spills and generally more reliability, right? And then it gets easier to automate. That's going to be my first comment about virtualization. That was virtualizing CDs or anything that you record off a record or tape or CDs. But this is just the beginning of that. Still in this transitional era, I know that old XL or Canon thing, that radio station I started for gave me a bunch of those as junk, and I thought they said they were like 20 amp rated. not officially, but some engineer, 15 or 20, they ran current down that at times, that old Canon connector. So, there's still CD elements. Still in this evolutionary period, as we're kind of coming forward to now, mics, cassettes, reel-to-reel, CD, turntables, preamps. Eventually AES-3 comes out, but that wasn't a big difference. Yes, that was digitizing audio, two channels of audio on an XLR cable, so you can half your run, and the quality typically will be better or less susceptible to noise and stuff. But that wasn't really a big difference. I mean, it's nothing like routable packets now. And I say STL and dry pair to the transmitter. Every slide I could say that, because there are still so many stations running dry pair to their radio transmitter, right? And some of these things that we're talking about really in the future, you need IP. So later on, control systems, broadcast automation, transmitter automation from this Mosley system comes out. Their SCUDI tones replace subaudible. Or DTMF, but GPIs, GPOs, they're still out there. I think they're going to die with all the rest of us one day. There's still going to be GPIs on, the most advanced devices out there, because that's still a base way to connect to translate. So controlled, systems are getting more automated. That's my point there. Talking a little bit about remote production, cell phones really did a major change in how to connect to people. Get, a bonded cellular, where you can really do a nice high-quality audio remote. That Marty remote pickup unit, I used to run around with those doing remotes. It really amazes people sometimes when you're doing not now, but back in the day when you're, miles from the station in the middle of the road or middle of a parade and you're live. That's pretty cool. And nowadays people totally accept that. Like, if you're not doing that, they're like, why not? Okay, yeah, still dry pairs. And then this is just, actually that's a GPS map, not actually a broadcast constellation, but it looked nicer. So I was trying to find some of the black background, so compromise, right? Artist, creative license. But certainly satellite and more terrestrial connectivity around the globe has made live production so fast and easy, and that no matter where you are in the world, you're listening to a live concert from somebody else, some other location. It's just I say it's just amazing. I mean, not that it's surprising. It's very easy, technically, but now. But it broadens the audience expectations, too, by the way. But all of a sudden, kind of a parallel with this is some broadcasters are like, net stations are like, well, we don't need to have our own concert orchestra anymore, do we? Because we just get all this content from, you know, this concert hall in New York or Philly or Boston or something. So that's something that starts going on. Also, another thing that's going on is consumers, right? I mean, I don't know how many people bring a TV to the beach, but apparently some people do. You know, Sony Walkman and then the Sony Radioman, if you could call it that, you know, the Walkman for FM, people expecting to have more portability. I mean, Walkman spoiled people to on-demand portable audio, the FM, the thing did, for at least portability for music to take, or audio to voice, whatever's on the program to take with you. So we're starting at this stage on the consumer side, seeing people get more and more selfish about their content. They want more of what they want exactly, when they want exactly, where they want exactly. So, and it's always hard to take those things back. So, and we, you know, that continues fast forwarding into today. Yeah, standards is going to be a fun thing to talk about. I was really going to go deeper into this, and I was like, no, there's just so many. And that's going to constantly change. You know, manufacturers come up with new standards sometimes to make their stuff more sellable, but often it's just because it's better. You know, better compression algorithms, more content, audio, video on a single pipe type of thing. It is amazing how so many things have gotten so cheap. And the audio quality of today, a prosumer thing, what we can do with our iPhone and a Bluetooth headset, rivals the top-end broadcast stuff of 20 years ago, roughly. I don't have an exact comparison, but I mean, it's that dramatic, you know. I don't know how many people hooked up a Neumann to an iPhone to go to live with that. I'm not sure if that's going to, but why not? If you've got a high-resolution USB D to A, why not? A to D, excuse me. And again, consumers are getting smarter with these things, too, because commercial, you know, products are becoming more, the creator of these products, the manufacturers of the consumer products have been getting them more flexible. Today, most of your facilities, here's a quick quiz. How many people here have what I would call a 100% analog facility, where from microphone to console, up to processing, is that all analog? How many has that? Okay. And then I know that Kirk did earlier ask, who's got really a networked facility where it's all IP from, you know, maybe not from the microphone, but from console to transmission all the way, you know, or at least to processing, all IP? Okay, wow. And of course, then I'm gonna ask this other question, hybrid. Who's got a little bit of both? And maybe that's all the hands go up. Yeah, so that's, none of us can talk about our exact situation twice. You know, if two people have a Tesla Model 3 or something, you can talk about things pretty much one-to-one. You sure can't do that with your broadcast facility. Broadcaster engineers are the most resourceful people I know on the planet, and I mean that. Them and folks that do live production, you know, setting up big concert stages in the middle of the field or something, you really got to think out of the box, and every station's different. And of course, there's different formats, right? There's 24/7 automated, there's local content live, a lot of, you know, local news that matters. Central casting is beginning a big thing, especially for groups. Centralizing with master controls, maybe leaving news or sales folks, you know, in the local markets for now, but how long will they do that? Some of it you have to leave, but, you know, they do that for saving money, certainly. There we go again. And again, hybrid programming modes. So no matter where you look at it, though, IT is influencing all of this. So that's that bottom line there. And that's no surprise. You all know that. Just a fast... This list could go on for days as far as types of file formats, transfer formats, topology, right, you know, what you're running on, Cat5 or fiber or, you know, analog audio, certainly if you've got an XLR to a microphone or a headset or something, different kind of control protocols. Every one of you probably has a story related to most of the formats on here and how you've connected it with most of the other, take your column, pick, you know, and then how it works or doesn't work or no longer works because of a software patch. That's a lot. When I worked for Lavo, they made digital switching environments where, you know, total IP video infrastructure and audio, where if they ever saw a patch bay in a truck, broadcast production truck, they would like, why is that there? Why do you need that? The truster or router was the term. There should be no patch bays in an ideally, with a router you can touch everything virtually. But the problem is there, touch. Ha, you can't touch that circuit anymore. If you really got program out here and you want to bypass this, or you got to, I don't know, take your pick, some kind of processing or something, you can so easily throw a patch cord. But in the router, you've got to, if you don't have some orchestration layer set up to do this for you, you've got to get in there and do some manual patching, which is hard to do when you're under stress. Grabbing a patch bay is easy when you're under stress. Or grabbing a patch cord, excuse me. Hum and noise and dirty connectors, how many times? After you got a bad pot and you got to turn it a bunch of times, okay, it's clean. You got a bad patch, okay, now it's clean, let's go. A few more remotes, you'll be worrying about it again. Also, though, very little signal conversion needed. With digital protocols, you may have to convert a few times in some way, shape, or form. Not always. Clearly, this is our future, right? This little router up there. It's not a fair photo because, of course, the back of it's going to have a whole bunch of Cat5 cables coming out of it. So, but the other side is just a bunch of light bulbs. So, okay, LEDs. But we're definitely moving forward through this analog hybrid, digital hybrid environment to software-defined infrastructure, software-defined in every way. And we're going to talk more about that. But so right now, it's just routing, right? But then eventually, software-defined console and production and AI, really. Audio over IP is the most elegant thing out there, I think. Takes time to learn. It takes time to configure routers. That's not easy. Power over Ethernet is really cool. Genelec got new speakers now that actually are PoE. I'm not sure if it's these, but they have some. This thing here, of course, has Ethernet connections on it, right? So you can just plug in audio into it just off of Ethernet. And if that's a PoE speaker, you don't even have to bring power to it. It's just like, there, audio going in, done. AES-67. This reminds me, years ago, I did a proof of concept thing with Lavo and Audio Technica, and we set up a pair of, they had a prototype that they later have shown at a trade show, so it's no longer a secret, but it was a radio studio mic with an Ethernet connector on the back of it. And it was so cool. It was in Ohio, and it was PoE, and they just plugged it into the router, and I just plugged in my system into the router, and I could see its audio, and it just routed their stream into my mixer and was mixing off their mic. You see a lot of AES-67 and IP and Dante mics for audio-visual stuff, like commercial things, but you just don't see a lot of them in radio or television right now. I'm not sure why. I mean, I guess it's because, first of all, you're assuming that the A to D in that chipset in that mic is good enough that you won't need, radio were audiophiles. So, in an AV environment where you've got 100 mics at podiums or seats, maybe that's not going to have to be as perfect. That might be why. But I think it's ultimately going to be much easier that the mics all just plug into a router and that's it. The same with headsets. I've never seen anyone sell or market an AOIP headset. Again, perfect example, you can run data through a PoE over a coily cord into the ears, amplification in the ears. There isn't any reason why not. I mean, that I can think of. I don't know if anyone has thought that, but one day you're going to see more of this stuff. And again, it already happens with PoE, AES-67 speakers. So these end devices here, I should have a headset in here just to talk about it, but a great modern studio here. Great photos from Wheatstone and Axia, right? These are great examples of studios really kicking ass right now. Oh wait, did it work? Okay, I have to really wait a long time to see that it isn't. It was just checking the captioning. But great examples of hybrid studios that are truly top-notch, online, on the air, with digital consoles, really more like surfaces. Probably the mixing is not happening in that console at all. That's just got one Ethernet port on the back going to a frame somewhere. The one cool thing here in this photo, and both these companies have things like this going on here, but lots of A to D, D to A still going on, things bolted in racks that are doing that. What Axia has in this console is a tablet, right? And you can take that, that's removable. You can take that and walk around and you get some flexibility in the studio. And all of a sudden, the user of that tablet may not be an engineer or a board operator, but talent. And you'll see this is kind of a key thing to look at, because this is going to push things forward in more of that direction. A lot of these faders, I look at faders these days and I'm just like, do we need all that now? I mean, yeah, if I was engineering, yes, of course. I've mixed up 38 channels of live stuff myself, and that's fun, but not typically needed. So the Ethernet connector, back to that. That is one major trend, no doubt. Okay, so I got to talk faster. Merriam-Webster, just Google this. What is virtualization? Is it something that's not real? That's what I take that first thing, or the second thing, a computer network, that's kind of more like us. A print book or a virtual book, if you didn't say the word print, all of a sudden I'd think the book virtual. I mean, I've had a tablet for a decade, and that's how I read at night, right? Or anytime. That's a real book to me. Okay, it's not a physical book. Maybe that if a book is defined as something that's bound, that might be a little different. Personally, my definition is at the bottom. It's extending the capabilities beyond hardware, advancing software's influence to streamline methods, technologies, and operations. Any of you will have things that make this change, this statement change. It really is the beauty in the eye of the beholder. Every opinion out there is different on what virtualization is. So I think partially it's overused. Like, remember I talk about play out, playing out off of a hard drive is not virtual anymore. So that's real. On to the next. But stuff that we've got, we make as a company, other companies make things that are very much virtual right now because of how it operates. So something to think about, I guess. When does virtual become real? No immediate answers. But I think for one thing, there's another term, virtual shopping. Well, if I'm buying off of Amazon, I'm just not driving to Target. So I'm still buying. It's still showing, okay, it's being shipped, so I don't have to go get it. But I don't think that's part of the term. Another thing, if you're live, your radio station, you're live playing out now from a solid state drive on Amazon Web Services, and it's IP connection to your transmitter, and you're on the air, is that virtual? Or are you like really on the air? I'm betting you're really on the air. It's just, how does it get there? So, I don't have answers. I have thought here, and in that these things are evolving. But I think I'm trying to sum it up to give you guys something, and it's a term that discusses something that might be in transition from a functionality that comes from one state and changes to another. That might be a virtual transition. Other things will be permanently virtual for some reason or another. So we could talk about that over many drinks tonight. Did I skip a slide? No, okay. These five or six things are run by real quick, but virtualization, cloud versus on-premises. Taking your play out that's normally maybe off of a system in the cloud, at the station, and moving it into the cloud completely. You could maybe say that's virtualizing your play out in the cloud, at least say that for now. One of the things that we have out there in the market is for disaster recovery, where we actually take what you've got running in the station, run it full-time synced up to the cloud at all times, playlists, libraries, everything is constantly in sync. So if your station goes down, virus, some kind of clickbait was clicked on, zero day, any gas main leak. I used to work at QVC. Going into work one day, everybody's outside the building. Why? A gas main got hit by a backhoe in the back. That changes the plans for the day real quick, even though they have backup plans. So, if you're in the cloud and in the studios, then you've got a disaster recovery system going on right there, because then you just need remote access back to that cloud system and redirect its IP audio to your transmitter and your backup on the air. At least for a while. One of the cool things that I do think virtualization is a good word for, but again, also evolving, is HTML, native HTML interfaces. You saw Kirk showing off their remote controls for their IQ consoles, right? We have the same thing for our playout stuff, where you can use a native HTML browser off a tablet or, something, whatever Chrome is, it's based on Chrome, Windows, Mac, what have you, and have a direct native connection back to the playout system. So you get more people can access the same system, the same, in our case, DAD system on one box at the same time, and not just from down the hall, but around the world. So that has obviously been just a huge growth thing since the pandemic kicked in. So that's virtualization of control, I suppose you could say. Central casting is sort of like virtualization of your studios. And it made me think when I did this, how is voice tracking different than that? Voice tracking, if it's done well, you think that the jock is in the studio talking about this song coming up or the weather for that day when they recorded that 2 days before. They're just a little more vague about the temperatures or something like that. Faders and controls and virtual machines are the two other cool things towards the end here. Virtualization as far as having a system running in the cloud, copying what you're doing in the main studios, crucial for something like this. When you've got a flood or a hurricane coming in or some other natural disaster and you got to leave the building in a hurry, if you have your content constantly backed up in the cloud, you're gooder to go. Not totally good to go, but yeah. Here's a great example of a tough learning lesson. And this is old now, that we've had far more actual on-the-air problems since this. KQED in San Francisco brought to its knees because of a front office virus opened up. Their doors wouldn't work. You know, magnetic strip access, security door, you know, badge, whatever, door access wouldn't work. Luckily, on-air was not touched. Two different networks. Point, great pointer. Air wall between the two, okay? You know, keep these two networks off each other. I mean, so Cumulus in Chicago land, right? In Milwaukee area, didn't they? They got hit, a couple years ago now. And that did affect on air through one central, now they have one central computer where everything has to be transferred. And it scrubs everything carefully. So that was the thing. And they were linked between different hubs around the country and stuff propagated through that network. Ouch. KQED, a couple of these things I already mentioned here, but they had to hire an IT guy full-time or gal, $475,000 total in recovery costs. And luckily, they said Amazon and Google hosted a lot of content, not on-the-air content, but other content. Those were fine. Those do some virus scrubbing. So stuff didn't get to the cloud. So yay. This is just an example of the architected system that I've been talking about, one of our things. And that is just, again, running play out back at the station and in the cloud and fully synchronized, constantly bidirectionally. You know, get all your as run logs and your playlists, everything still in sync with the cloud. And when that cloud is done, then migrate it back. So your logs still are pretty much in perfect sync. So you know what ads played and what didn't, stuff like that. So that is virtualizing. Yeah, that's definitely a word I like to use, virtual, because maybe virtual is also a good word for things that aren't quite settled yet. Like not only just in transition, but just not, we don't have another name for it. Remote desktop, VNC, we all use that, but that's not like that native control. That HTML5, you know, capability in a browser is much more cool. It's dynamic HTML, it's JavaScript, it's cascading style sheets, it's nice looking interfaces. I don't know of any company that's not building interfaces that are web friendly. You know, I don't mean public website friendly, but just from a web page or smart device, tablet, what have you. Very reconfigurable. And the other cool thing is these are control screens that are pretty easy and cheap to draw. When you have a user like a host using remote desktop or VNC or something to another computer to go on air, do you really want them to have access to everything that computer has on it? That's what they're going to get with RDP. But if you can have an app that your customer or your vendor makes for you or that you can customize that has just the things you need that person needs to do their job, just give them that. Less rope to kind of tangle themselves up with, I think, is what that's good for. Moving forward, time flies. We talk about central casting. Obviously, it's being done for saving money. Virtualizing studios away from the markets where the commentators are in, that's less done, but does get done. Sirius and XM certainly pioneered that. There's this street in Detroit called Gratiot. Back when Sirius XM first launched, they had the local traffic, and they kept always calling it Gratiot. Clearly, that's a guy or gal in Washington, D.C. that has no idea that in Detroit it's pronounced Gratiot. So, you know, it ain't perfect. But that's a thing that's going to keep going on, and it's going to be a challenge. Although renting a lot of high reliability backup fiber to your transmitters around a region to a master control, that costs money too. So, and then you still got to get people out to these transmitters, which is always a problem. So just kind of bringing up that, you know, central casting is certainly a part of virtualization. The voice tracking, I'm not sure if that's virtual or not. Maybe another word for virtual is if somebody's listening to something at home and they can't tell if that's live or Memorex, then that's virtual. But control interfaces, yes, today is National Star Trek Day. So Michael Okuda was the graphics designer along with Rick Sternbach of these original interfaces for this series. And they were tweeting about that today. But when you are an engineer or a student and you see these things that work in fiction, don't you get ideas about making them in real life? So that's what's happening now. You could fly the Enterprise with the tablet. Well, now you can fly a 747 probably, or 777 probably off of a tablet. Just don't drop it, especially if it's got an accelerometer in it. And it's like, whoa! So, you know, this really is happening. And so I love science fiction, some of it because of that. Here's the thought about control surfaces, and we are getting close to winding down. Follow my logic. This was after some coffee at Starbucks, I think. Literally, faders control signals flowing into and out of a mixer or a console, you know. Buttons turn channels on and off, right? Humans control these faders and buttons. But buttons can also trigger automation and playout, right? That has its own logic. And then that automation and playout, therefore, via that logic, can control those faders and those buttons. Wait a second, where did the human go? I mean, you know, if you can automate a lot of these things, and I'm not saying the human's gone. The human's busy doing other things, as we'll see in one slide coming up. But a lot of what you do on a physical console, it relates to how we used to have to control circuits, literally. But as certainly Kirk likes to talk about, and the Wheatstone folks as well, you can virtualize a lot of that. I'm a big fan of AutoMix, and we hear about AGC and a really high-end AGC going on with Orban. There are ways that you can trust these automatic level controllers of various types to control dynamics between people. With AutoMix, Lavo, the German guys, have a console capability where the host is higher level, the guests are at lower levels, the phone-ins or remote connections or guests are at lower levels. So the host always gets to control, you know, the dialogue. The same could be used for, let me read my own notes. Oh yeah, when they're like cutting a donut, it's easy for the auto mix to cut the, you know, music down when they're doing the voiceover. But with auto mix, then even what is a button for if it's not just infinite gain reduction? Do you even need a button there? And yeah, a button is logic or a pickle, but do you really need to turn that channel on enough? So I have like two lines for something that I wish I could have a whole presentation about, and that's AI, assistive technologies and algorithms. That is a term that is we're going to be seeing more of this. As we're using AI for this automatic speech to text thing that you've been looking at, there's one flavor there, but that's just trying to get voice better. Imagine this. Imagine you've got a host that's on the air, and you have a camera using some visual, you know, like any kind of video games these days. You can track where you're moving your hands and stuff. And there's an AI that's reading that and knows what certain hand gestures mean. But the AI can also hear what they're talking about. They can also know what time it is. They also know what's in the playlist coming up. And so the host literally can say, okay, well, we'll be right back after this, and points. And the AI knows they're done talking, bring down their mics, play the next three promos or trailers, and then when they're done, bring their mics back up. I mean, that's actually simple, as long as the AI is making the right decision, which will take some time. But I think that that's absolutely going to happen. And then why do you even need that console there? You'll have a monitor with some buttons on it. But I think that would be freeing for a host to have something like that. Glass cockpits, right? This is the glass cockpit phase of the presentation. Lots of glass on the left behind each of those dials, or behind each glass piece is a dial. Those do work. Those really work. But so does the ones on the right. You know, whoever flown here, certainly you walk by the cockpit and like, oh, there's a bunch of TVs in there. But they add more capability. Look at that weather map on the right monitor. You wouldn't get that on the thing on the left. And there's a whole lot more with modern glass cockpits. You can do your flight plans and stuff on a tablet and via Bluetooth send it to your avionics. You can't do that with the stuff on the left. Yes, if somebody takes a hammer and, you know, bangs the middle of the monitors on the right and you're flying, you might be in trouble. I would hope they have certain fixes for that. And these things are highly resilient and mission critical, but still, you know, nothing's perfect. So, yeah, glass cockpits aren't perfect, but I think they make things better. This photo is a station in NRK. Is that Norwegian, I think, Norway? Two photos of different things going on. I actually like to point up the upper right one first. That's the audio mixing position, except there's no audio faders. That's a guy with a console that is mostly concerned about visual radio, because look behind him, they're doing visual radio at the same time. And we keep hearing more about visual radio. I think if you're not busy mixing faders, you can start mixing video, or at least checking the system to make sure it is properly doing that based on, you know, who's talking. And again, an AI, to maybe the AI knows you're getting to a point and it's going to leave the camera on a little bit longer, or not, I don't know. Maybe the point knows you're rambling like me and it'll cut the camera off. But again, in the lower left picture, there's an audio console. There's all those mics out in front, but there's no faders. You can get to those faders if you want. There's screens that you can do that. But I really think this assistive technology, computer-based AI, not always just AI, just good code, is moving things in that direction where consoles go away. And kids these days, I mean, out of this room, there's probably two people who don't have a smartphone on them, right? A touchscreen, right? I say that because I do know a couple people with flip phones still, and they brag about how they work all the time, and you know, so I'm like, oh. But for the most part, we're all getting used to touch interfaces, and you know, here's a great example of a virtual radio from Axia, and what those folks in Cleveland have going on here is all this kind of software running, and these are screens that you totally configure with the things you need on it, not with the things you don't. That to me looks like a busy screen that could be maybe more of an administrator or an engineering setup screen, and maybe you have a fewer simpler buttons when you're doing a lot, you know, the live on air production, you know, thing. And then again, if you have that, what do you need those console faders buttons for? Yes, if you've got a host that's 70 and he's always used a physical console, they're going to want that. And so, you know, not. It's tough because you're doing a lot of psychological decision making too when you're making these changes. This is one close up of what is called Ruby Plus or something like that. This is. And I know I should have photoshopped out the Omni player and put the Enco Dad player in that, but I'm trying to be unbiased here, so you know. But this is a typical example of an on-air position for these guys. Those are buttons on the sides that they can toggle to turn a mic on and off or hit play out. And the whole playout system otherwise is in that. That's an HTML5 interface in that, and they just tap that and the next thing starts if they want to go outside of the automation. So again, no physical faders. Okay, real quick, virtualization in hardware. Was it Kurt? I think Kurt talked about a lot of the VMs that are they're only becoming passe now in data centers and stuff. But they are, because there's so many of them. And as you move things towards IT, the technology has been there for a long time. Everything's IP-based. Well, then why not have an array of servers, blades, that either are at your studio, fully redundant, hot swappable drives that are synced up to an equivalent of that in the cloud. Then you've got a lot of resiliency right there. That's just a thought. Just instead of having one computer, like we have customers that use our Enco One system that have multiple instances of DAD on these arrays, where you can yank out a couple hard drives and the thing keeps running. So, and I mean all of the instances. So that's a mission critical kind of thing. And it takes up less space too. I should have had that slide on earlier. But again, resiliency and robustness. You know, and then you had cost. I don't know does it cost more to put 10 servers on one of these boxes than to buy 10 servers? Well, think about the heat loads and the rack space. I mean, there's a lot of pieces of that pie, but a lot of broadcasters are doing that already. So there you go. Last one. Paul Summit, are you here? So somewhere in here, Paul from Summit Technologies is part of this. There's a couple of companies, a few companies out there working on human voice simulation, right? And so at this point, it's mostly being done in weather, but taking known talent, hosts, voice models, you know, making a digital model after it. For years, you've seen musical instruments, amps being modeled, and you can have one guitar sound like another, stuff like that. It's happening with people as well. And when you get enough sampling of this person, when you're listening on the air, you're hearing them read the weather forecast, and it sounds like they're there reading the weather forecast when they're at home taking a nap. And the cool thing about that is it's logic, it's data. All these things that they are saying are you can chop them all up into different segments, and you can use some of it again, and it's just dynamically generated by a computer, so I mean, you can make them say anything, scary as that might be. I talk about repurposing the simulated content. There's really no repurposing. You're just generating it on the fly again and again. based on a time of day and what are the content that you're playing around it and stuff like that. So what's neat about that too is it's not pre-recorded stuff on a Friday. If there's truly emergency weather going on, these companies can give, you know, there's ways to get the those emergency messages out, even with the host modeled voice, about we have flooding down on the river here and that parking deck has been closed because of flooding, you know, stuff like that. This almost becomes more of an emergency support kind of environment, and it just sounds nicer because it's the normal voice that the listener is expecting to hear. So almost done. I'm calling this a software-defined broadcasting. It was kind of glass cockpit, but it's all related. Like I said, host. You know, I guess I'm recapping. Computers, host traffic, programming, local cloud, playout and automation, sync them together for resiliency. Transmitter control, we've got that. We're happy with the FCC for logging. The AI for stuff coming up later on, as far as maybe mixing for you. It's interesting. And then software for modeling people's voices. I don't know, how many radio stations here have done anything with any modeling of voices yet? Okay. I was expecting one or two, so it clearly depends on the market, and it's a little scary, and I don't know actually what the cost. I don't know if it's cheaper to do that or not. And for what it's worth, it's not perfect. There are some audio. Oh, I thought I was done. Oh, geez. Okay, so we're going to skip past here. Okay. That was the bam thing. That was my sound effect. There's drinks over there. What is this? Okay, right? I will have to ask you to answer the question, sir. Someone, what is that? Okay, what I was hoping was that somebody would say that's somebody voicing something during the pandemic. That's from 2007. This was NPR guy, Jerome Sokolowski, doing voiceovers when he was in Spain. So people have been doing production work from home for a long time. Here is the Colbert studio, right? That was a recreation of a studio back in his New York set once they moved back, because his home basement set became so iconic. So that's somebody's, you know, we're talking about people's homes here. On the right, PBS NewsHour hosts shooting live, Judy Woodruff on the lower part, and I forget his name on the right. Sometimes the guy on the right had a cat on his couch cleaning itself, and I just always love, like, there's the cat. You know, one day I'm like, where's the cat? So my point here is, I'm going really fast, is just that these are broadcast studios feeding millions of people from their homes, whether it's, you know, in radio with Jerome Sokolowski or these examples here. That's not going to go away. These questions, and this is what I'd love to discuss, is that timer counting me down, or is that with questions, or is it total? Oh, shit. Okay. All right, so maybe we can talk over beers and later about these questions, about what denotes live anymore. You know, when someone's live, they're already delayed anyway by a few seconds. Are they, they're not live then. And then the impacts of how radio does things versus TV, and one leads the other. Usually it's radio leading TV, but remote production things, you know, we were going to talk about some of that and touching signals virtually and stuff. And hey, discussion now. Okay. I'm going to take a few slides out next time. I guess, is there no room for a queue? I guess there's no room for...
No, they can talk to you in your booth.
Okay, sorry, everybody. Party's over. No, the party's just about to begin. Okay, thanks.